Now presenting the Webcomic Beacon Newscast.
Start recording this just because then Fess can laugh at us not doing a good job of this.
All right, so we're going to start recording. Should we start up? Is that...
Yeah, let's go ahead and... Now, I'm going to be doing the usual Fess role of technically not actually being part of the show. Okay. But I have read through at least some of the news items, and I, like Mike, can jump in and talk whenever you feel that there's a need for somebody to talk. So,
okay. So... what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce everyone, and I'll let you guys give the links to whatever you want. Yep. And that way I don't have to remember. And Mike, is it okay if I call you Mike, or do you want to be Onyx Sparrow?
Mike is just fine.
Stefan, same with you. Stefan, okay?
Yep. I mean, Therizinosaurus is my my general online name, which yep. people most likely know me by, so that's fine as well.
Would you prefer there is no Saurus?
Yeah, what the hell. Let's use that.
Okay.
And this is episode 190.
Yep.
So.
All right. We're going to start in 5, 4. Welcome, everyone, to episode 190 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. My name is Eric. I'm going to be the host for today. We're going to give you all the news that you don't need to know. And... we're going to start off with our panelists. Joining us today is Mike. Mike, introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Mike from the webcomic onyxsparrow.com.
And then we have also on our panel today, There Is No Saurus. Care to introduce yourself?
Hi, guys. I'm There Is No Saurus. I'm from the comic Hero in Training at herointrainingcomic.com.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have Adam Smithy. In the background, say hi, Adam.
Hello. I'm running the bus today since Fess is not here, so I'm going to be talking less and pushing buttons more.
And as we do every week, we go through the weekly news in webcomics and webcomic-related things and talk about them and say how they affect us and what we think about the general state of the web. And we're going to jump off into our news articles. First item on our news, Scott Kurtz and Chris Straub raise money for a web show of them basically fooling around in front of a camera. It took them less than a week to raise $50,000 needed for this series. They used a Kickstarter, and they posted it up on their sites and raised a boatload of money. People are very excited to see Scott Kurtz and Chris Straub. And... I don't know. Does anyone have any comments on that?
Well, it's not extremely sort of surprising. Penny Arcade's got a similar thing running already.
Yes.
Several webcomics have started doing sort of podcasts and almost really like going a dual business model where they're working both comic and sort of commentary, since it's worked so well for Penny Arcade, which I guess is the original and the best in that respect.
Yeah.
I think this is probably the first time, though, someone's really... looked for venture capital to get the thing off the ground, though.
Yeah, this is very definitely off of the Penny Arcade style. It is linked with Penny Arcade. In their Kickstarter, they had Koo, the famous business manager of Penny Arcade, included in that video. They're using a professional company. That's why they need the $50,000 to film them. And, yeah, I mean, they're doing it, but I don't know. I didn't find the Penny Arcade videos that interesting, and I can imagine finding the Chris Straub and Scott Kurtz videos even less interesting. But people want to see it.
Yeah, apparently so. I mean, it's this whole reality TV bent that people are on. Everybody yeah. wants more details, more looking at things that they've never been able to see before, behind the scenes and real life. And
yeah,
it's probably going to be just as fake as any other reality TV show. It's like, look, we're performing for a camera. personally, I don't care about such things. But hey, if you're a fan and you want to see it, more power to you. Good luck. Yep.
Well, I think,
in a sense, it's one of the big things with sort of internet celebrity internet culture is you have a sort of more direct link between the producers of the content and their audience. With sort of traditional TV and whatnot, there's a disconnect between, you'd say, like the anchors, the faces of the shows, and the people who are consuming them. Whereas with the internet, the people who are making the stuff are more often than not the people who are also like uploading it, managing the site, and so forth. So there's that sort of feeling that you're a lot closer. And I think people are a lot more interested in communicating directly. I mean, we've got Twitter and Facebook and people blogging and commenting. We've got forums for webcomics, all that sort of stuff. There's a much closer link. And I think that's what this is really playing off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The only thing I would worry about with something like this is there's kind of a, the expression is never meet your heroes. And I got to wonder, some of these people may in fact turn out to be fantastic artists, but terrible people to like actually get to know. So that's potentially kind of, I guess, the end run downfall I see of things like this is, like you said, it's going to turn out, you know, if the cult of whatever it is can sustain it, then that's great. And if it's not, it's going to turn out that people don't actually like the individuals as much as they like the stuff that they make. And
but terrible individuals are interesting characters. I mean, this is the thing. Scott has built his career off of being a horrible person. So we all find it interesting and amusing.
Well,
except for me.
Yeah.
Look, this is not going to be the Scott Kurtz love fest here, clearly, but lots of people, the horrible characters on these reality shows are always the most popular. They're the ones everyone wants to see. So I think being horrible isn't bad for you. It may be bad in your personal life and everything else. It's being boring that's bad. And that may be the bigger downfall is if someone who is not very social and not very charming tries to do one of these and turns, it's just dull. But let's move on.
It's more if someone's not interesting. You have to be interesting, whether it's good or bad. And I think really Scott Kurtz is definitely an interesting character. I really don't know much about Chris Straub, I'm afraid, so I can't comment there.
No,
but
one does.
You know, it's got the makings of something interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris Straub is a very weird character because no one knows. I mean, he's on a lot of stuff, but for the love of God, I can't remember him. He's always the straight man, he's always the other guy to the other characters. And it's an important role, but everyone remembers Jerry Lewis. No one remembers Dean Martin. That's sort of.
So what we're saying is he's Kurt's, you know, Ron Schneider.
Yes, exactly right. So let's move on. Our next news item coming to. Oh, I forgot to say that the news item for Chris and Scott came directly from PvP. They posted it on their website. Our next news item coming from Comics Talk. Is about the return of Liberty Meadows. Liberty Meadows, after a long and crazy battle through a number of different intellectual property debates and trying to get a TV series running and that failing and just difficulty of dealing with producers, Liberty Meadows is coming back and all of the past comics have now been posted online. So the question is it coming back as a traditional comic or is it coming back as a web comic? There hasn't been any announcements of that yet, but everyone is interested to see. And this is, so, I mean, have you guys noticed this trend of a lot more professionals putting their stuff on the web?
Yes. I mean, I've never heard of this comic before. Presumably, it is possibly an American syndicated comic.
It's an American syndicated comic. It was famous for having talking animals and a woman in it with a stupendous rack. So that was its two calls to fame.
Pretty good.
The artist is really good. Yeah, the artist is really excellent at drawing, and so it was one of the best drawn comics in the syndicated Field, it was on the vein of, you know, your Garfields or whatever, where it was a gag-a-day strip with sometimes mini-stories taking place. Do you have Bloom County there? Do you know what that is?
I'm afraid not.
Okay. Similar to Bloom County, Opus and a couple others of these sort of weird otherworldly places. Also call back to Calvin and Hobbes sort of style of things. Except yep. Instead of little kids, it's adults.
And again, this is not something that I'm too surprised about. Just in the business world, online advertising, online marketing is very, very lucrative these days. So
yeah.
Really, I mean, if you've got a choice of putting whatever you're doing online and putting it in a newspaper, I can guarantee you if you put it online, you're going to get more money from advertising, and you don't have to go through the newspaper to get it.
Yeah.
No. And plus, yeah. we've seen changes in the world as it is anyway. I mean, we already see newspapers taking huge downfalls in subscriptions and everything because people are on the internet anyway. So yeah, most newspapers are now having online sites and everything too. So comics following up. I mean, webcomics were just ahead of the trend. Everybody's now coming to us instead, which is kind of amusing, really.
I think one of the things that changed was the big Hollywood strike a few years ago. That's when a lot of the American creative types fled the like traditional Hollywood mold because they had to keep food on the table. That's when Cinematic Titanic was formed by all of the old MST3K people because it was something to do. That's when I think funnierdie.com got started. That's mm-hmm. when Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, all of that free time opened up this whole other world of putting stuff on the internet where there wasn't 60 people in suits, each taking their handful of money to all of these creative types. And now it's reaching the point where people are realizing that this could be a sustainable enterprise again without it being like another early 90s dot-com bubble burst only with entertainment this time.
Yep. So, moving along, speaking of sustainable, our next news item is Machine of Death has at this point received over 103 submissions, approximately 317,000 words. And this is for the second Machine of Death book, which was a book based off of webcomics and became famous for getting number one on Amazon and beating Glenn Beck on that day, and using all of the web technology. So another big book coming out from these guys, and they have a lot to read through. I don't know.
Is this like a compilation book or a...
It is a compilation storybook. The Machine of Death works on the principle that there are stories all with the same premise, that there is a machine that can tell you when you're going to die, and then you will write and the stories are written around that concept. It contains both comics and stories, and illustrated stories. So it's sort of bridges both gaps, and it was done by many, many famous web cartoonists.
So it's sort of almost like a similar to the Flight series. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Yep. Very similar, although it's more text, less art.
Yes, less art.
All right.
And so, that is quite surprising that it was that popular, because web comic books are reasonably popular for what they are, but I wouldn't have expected that to be really mainstream over popular.
Yeah,
well, I don't know if it has much to do with webcomics at that point. I mean, if they produced a book called Machine of Death and it's full of tons of different stories, I mean, people will just buy it outright for that, not that it has anything to do with webcomics at all.
Yeah. Well, these guys were some of the heavy hitters in the webcomic community. This was not small webcomics. This was people like... This was people like Dinosaur Comics, Dr. McNinja. These were some of the big guys. And what they did is, on a single day, they said, everyone buy on Amazon on this day. It's called the Amazon flood technique. That promotes your comic to the first page. That promotes your book to the first page of Amazon. And then it gets wider recognition. And the reason they could do this is that they had websites with huge, huge followings who were very loyal. I mean, and they could tell them to buy anything, and they'd probably buy it. So they use their webcomics to promote the book.
You think the turnout of the webcomic community last time is going to encourage them to tip the balance between comics and prose this time?
I think they like prose. I think they think prose is a bit more mainstream, and they're asking for prose submission. They are not asking for comic commit submission. So they seem to be going directly for prose. Hmm. All right. So let's move down to our discussion topics, although we're discussing everything, so it's sort of weird that we divide that up. We have the first item here, this coming to us from Comics Talk, and originally sourced on Collective Inkwell. And the title of this article is "The Secret to Success is Piracy." And this is, yet again, talking about a best-selling book. This best-selling book was Go the Fuck to Sleep.
Great title.
And it was a children's book written for adults who are trying to get their kids to go to bed. And what happened was a PDF got leaked of this book long before it was published and made the BitTorrent and other pirate site route. And what the publisher found was it increased demand for the book, so it became a best-selling book. And using those technologies where the piracy actually helped out the book.
Yes.
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, just things with titles like that.
Yeah.
Absolute viral marketing, like gold.
Mm-hmm. No, yes.
Because that sort of thing will spread very, very quickly throughout the sort of culture the pirate networks have.
I think that's sort of the takeaway, is that piracy and, you know, giving and free stuff will work if it's a viral product. I mean, if someone is pirating,
if it's interesting. You know, if it's novel, if it's interesting, if it's a bit weird and out there and sort of panders to that culture, which has always been about being a little bit out there against the mainstream trends.
Yeah, where the principles of Calculus Edition 3, even if that's pirated, that's not going to increase the sales. That's, you know, a book that is not got that interesting new feel to it. This model doesn't work.
And something like this, it's like, this is the kind of book that you want the actual physical book to sit on a coffee table or on a shelf for to be able to show people. It doesn't work digitally.
Yeah. Yeah, it's another, that was another thing they brought up in the article, that the physical artifact of this book is very important to people, where other books, you read it and it's done. If the book was more cotton candy, where something you wouldn't want to read again, then this would never work because the person would read the book and they'd be done with it. It works, but not all the time.
Plus, I would think something like that would make a really neat gift, especially if you knew somebody who had a baby like me, who's going through that whole not
intense,
wanting to go to sleep
nudge
thing, like mine is, which is why I'm podcasting today from the shed behind my house instead of in my house, because I didn't want to run the risk of waking her up. So I would think personally that this would make a fantastic sort of gift, and, you know, emailing somebody a PDF versus, you know, actually giving them a physical object, you know, there's a lot more of a meaning to that when you've got an object to attach to it. So
this would make a lovely baby shower gift. All I could say, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, but I mean,
give it to them along with the Book of Bunny Suicides.
Nice.
But that's sort of the point, is that when you're thinking of selling something virally, you've got to really think about, is there value to the physical object? And that's really a lot, something that people really overlook a lot of times. You know, they say, well, I'm just going to put my comics in a book and I'm going to sell it. Well, are your comics worth something in a book? I mean, is your comic something that people reread, or is it just a one-time sort of thing? And it's really a tough decision to make.
It's a very valuable idea for people like me, actually, who are in the sort of webcomics business. Whether you just make a compilation of your comic, because that is sort of valuable, but yeah. Putting a bit of extra thought into somehow making that book be more than a book. A good example of it is Dresden Kodak, if anyone knows of that comic. He published his Hobbs storyline as a book. And he got it sort of individually bound. So he presented the book not so much as just the comic itself, but really as a physical collector's piece. I actually got one, and I can tell you it's this really amazing, like, hand-bound, beautifully presented, almost piece of, like, constructed artwork, completely ignoring the comic itself, that you can show off, you can have, you can admire. You can smell. Smells really good. And it compare that to going through like Lulu and just getting a, you know, sticking everything in a PDF straight up, printing on demand, might not be as popular.
These are lessons that we get when trying to sell any kind of product. You have to make it unique. You have to make it different enough to stand out from the crowd, saying, "I must have one of these."
But even more so for us, who, I mean, I'm putting all my content up for free on the internet.
Yes.
If I want someone to pay for it, I got to give them something a bit special.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think, a good point to go to our next topic. And our next topic, coming to us through Fleen, is in contrast to Scott Kurtz and Chris Straub raising $50,000 just to screw around on tape, webcomics have raised over $100,662 for charity using Kiva and using links for their site. So this is a tool that has been organized by the creator of Sister Claire, and it is a charity where you can donate and raise funds for people in need in the third world. And they've raised a great deal of money for those charities by combining the links from all their sites. And
yeah, I'm very glad to hear that. I mean, I'm close friends, or not really close friends, but friends with the creative Sister Claire, Yamino.
Yamino.
You're close friends, but you can't pronounce her name. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right. Sure you are.
You drop.
Well, yeah, is it Yamino? And I mean, I call her Alina, so. But it's really, really good to see that charity drive is going well. There's also the sort of webcomic postage card one that's driving that I wanted to get into, but it's really hard for me being in Australia. I mean, getting stuff shipped out and shipping it back, it's a real pain in the ass. To use an Australianism. but yeah, it's really good to see that's going well. And it's really, you know, great to see. I mean, Charles Play with Penny Arcade, the creator of Inhuman, often has these sort of charity drives over Christmas and makes like ridiculous amounts of money for a small webcomic. It's always good to see just how nice the webcomics community are in that respect.
Yeah, I think we're going to take a break, and we'll come back to this in just a moment. But right now we'll take a break and hear from our sponsors. And what the heck was... Okay, we're on break. Adam, what happened?
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics host and community at rampagenetwork.com. And don't forget, we broadcast live on Sundays at webcomicbeacon.com/live. Join our live chat room, have news reports or Becky art, transmit them to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. Questions? Dial our voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. And now, back
we're back, and we're going to move on talking about the weekly news, moving into our tech section. And our first tech article comes from Collective Inkwell, talking about the future of ebooks. This is an article on about how ebooks should change using the new technology. The full article is on J.A. Cornith's blog, and it's a long article going through a bunch of ideas, talking about bringing the community and user experience into the ebook format. So, tooling the technology and the app so that when you buy the book online, you also get direct access to the community and the author and the author's blog all bundled together into one program. And so it's a proposition. This is not quite done yet. This is simply a challenge for the future of making this entirely inclusive ebook instead of just having text. And it's a good, it's got a couple of good ideas, got a couple of limitations. It's on here because it's very similar to what a lot of webcomics try to do, of making this completely inclusive environment, although it's set with the digital reader format instead of the website format. Mm-hmm. You guys think that has legs, or should we stick to HTML?
I think it could work. I mean, it depends on the books you're talking about. You could set up kind of book clubby kind of deals with it. But personally, if I'm buying a book, I want to just read the book. I don't know if I need to have the website and the author's comments and everything else attached to it at the same time. But if you want it on hand while you're reading the book to be able to complain to the author when something is stupid, you know, go right ahead.
Yeah. I'm way too familiar with that.
It's a really interesting area because this is sort of one thing that, that the internet is really messing with is sort of traditional business models. And ebooks is one of those really tricky things where you want to make them as accessible as possible, but in doing so, you're going to make it so people can just get them and they don't really have to pay for it. So while it would be nice to believe that everyone's just going to buy it legitimately, using that sort of model is going to really prove tricky because no one is. So if you have that issue, you have to start thinking up different ways of getting people to give you money. Yeah. And if, you know, the history of the internet and what we've seen in business models that have worked on it is any indication, the best way of doing that is not to get people to be interested in your content, but to be interested in you.
Yep.
So people who are personalities as well as content producers generate communities that are interested in them as people. And if you can identify with a person, then you're more willing to go, well, I want to support you. I see what you're doing. I can see your struggles. I can see you working hard to get me this stuff that's good and I like it. And I want you to be able to keep doing this. So instead of paying for your content, I'm just going to give you money because I like you. Yep. And that's where this whole donation model comes from. So really working ways in which you can get a person wrapped up in their work and people to not see a piece of content as just a piece of content, but to see it as the work of a person, of an author, yep. Is very, very important for that model to work. Yep. If you just have content, then there's no reason for people to like just before even the content comes out to support the author.
But those are the things we run into with all these kind of problems, is that just because you're a creative person and you can make a fantastic product doesn't mean that you have a personality that can talk to people and deal with stuff and be funny and charismatic. And the same thing is why some people can't go to conventions and sell things, because they can't talk to people. They can't deal with that side of it.
It's not my fault my stuff didn't sell. They stuck me at the end of the hallway.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the biggest problems we have with the webcomic model. We're running off of a single model here where it is the based off of the charismatic creator. And that is a good model, but that is also leaving out a lot of good content. That just gets lost, and there are other models that need to be developed. And sometimes, yeah, community sites are good, and in this this article, it is about enabling community. So it says, you know, fan fictions can be part of the book itself. So you can get fan fictions, and then you can have fan fictions that the author approves of. And that's not so much the charismatic author. That's simply saying, look, at you guys own this book, and you're part of it. And that's another valuable tool there, is not so much the charismatic author. It's giving ownership to the community.
No, that actually sounds like an interesting concept in itself. Being able to write a core set of books and then create a community where people can actually have an expanded universe canon that's actually approved and put forward for other people to have. That actually is an interesting concept.
Yeah. Now, that actually has been done, not in books, but in video games. If any of you are familiar with Valve and Team Fortress, they've recently now allowed the community content creators who make the sort of like the hats and whatnot to get a cut. And if I don't know if any of you caught up with this, but they got royalty checks of something like $20,000 in their first week.
Wow.
Well, it
isn't bad.
No, it's not.
I wouldn't say no to that.
No. It has actually happened in some books, though. I mean, that's when we get into like Star Wars and such. We had a core set for the movies, and then they started producing books. And there are tons and tons of books made, many authors, and they're all canon. They're all part of the system. So I mean,
but in a sense, they're licensed products, though.
Yes,
which it's a little bit different.
Yeah, but I mean, there is a sort of in between where you can say this fan fiction is part of. You can put up these fan fictions, and I'm going to read them. And if they're good, I'm going to say, yeah, this is part of the universe, where it is a sort of where the author doesn't give up control over the universe, but at the same time, you get a much more expanded universe, and you get much more content than any individual can create. Because that's the other problem, is just creating content. There is a limitation on how much content you can create, where if you get a community involved, you can create much more content than just an individual.
Back to the original question of abandoning HTML for proprietary formats and stuff, though. Mm-hmm. As you know, I love the Kindle, but as the tablets continue to evolve and the internet becomes more and more pervasive, I can't imagine that at some point in time everything isn't going to wind up being run to some extent off of like cloud-based something or other. And you know, we're looking, I'm looking into, for some friends of mine, possibly converting their comic into like an e-reader compatible format. But at the same time, then I look at things like, you know, well, the Kindle has a web browser built into it, and the iPad, and you know, anything Android has that built into it. And that there has to be a cost benefit threshold at some point where the amount of effort that it's going to take to funnel your content into a specific content package, especially if you're not taking a, you know, if you're going to still be doing it for essentially free, that there has to be a threshold where it's not worth, you know, dicing off all the corners just so that it'll fit through a hole when that hole's getting bigger.
We've hit this trend a couple of times, and I can tell you, a couple of years ago, I looked at the smartphone market, and I said, I've got to convert my comic to smartphone proportions, and I've got to get it converted. And I started the process, but as I started the process, I started to see web browsers were starting to come online, and it suddenly didn't make any sense anymore to use that. And I gave up the process because I said, "Nah, they can look it on the web." That's about it. So yeah, it's really difficult now with books. Books have never been on the web, so it makes a lot more sense for prose, because people don't like reading huge amount of prose on the web, but they do like reading it on an e-reader. So it makes more sense in that respect. Well, let's move on. Comics for the vision impaired. This one coming from to us from Comics Talk. Speaking of HTML, there is a comic that uses HTML5. This is the new iteration of HTML that occasionally you hear about, to create a comic that can be read by a text reader for the vision impaired. All the elements are defined on the screen. All the text is text that the reader can get into, so that it can actually read the comic without having to see the comic. Opinions on that?
It's good to see.
Well, not see as the...
Well, there's been a lot of things gone in that direction for writing out the text in comics and such just for search engine compatibility. So, I mean, to set up in that direction, it only makes sense to do it that way. And if you also have the added benefit of giving it, you know, letting someone else, you know, look at your comic, that's, I don't see a problem with that at all.
And it can be easily translated. There's advantages to it. Here's the disadvantage. It's a pain in the neck to make, and it limits what you can do on the page. Because everything has to be in a panel. Every object has to be defined. It's a lot more effort to put into to creating a comic. So
I'd have to wonder how much of a demand for this sort of thing there is. And I'd be more inclined to, you know, I'm fully in favor of it, but I'm not going to run out and do this to my comic. I'm going to see if it becomes a thing. You know, I'd rather be well ensconced in the middle of the pack than an early adopter or a caboose on this one.
Actually, that's one of the things I looked at more closely, because Yamino, who we were talking about earlier, has a side comic project called Nightingale, which is specifically focused around both being about vision and hearing impaired people and being accessible to those people. Now, I'm not sure that was originally intended to be a webcomic project, but that's a very interesting little thing to see start popping up in webcomics. And it's just another sort of indication of, like, webcomics have always been ahead of the trend, and I don't really see huge amounts of sort of effort to make the internet completely accessible to vision impaired people. Presumably it's reasonably accessible to hearing impaired people already.
Well, yeah, they can see it.
Yeah, just this idea. Presumably it's not just going to be we're going to make the dialogue readable. It's going to be a full sort of vision impaired translation, so they'll have captioned panels where everything's described, so what's going on and whatnot.
Well, that should be easy enough to pull off anyway. We've already seen going through Facebook and things that they can identify people's faces and put names hovering text over them and everything, so why not do that to the text as well? I mean, certainly possible.
And that's basically what this does, is it defines everything on the screen, defines the panels, it uses HTML5, so the comic is actually dynamically generated from a file that is created for the vision impaired. So it actually creates the comic from the vision impaired description instead of the other way around, which is a unique way of doing it.
The next step will be touch screens that have raised Braille that'll appear.
That would be actually really a next kind step. Of
it's
awesome.
Been done already. It's been done already.
Oh, yeah. You know, can I share a horrible thought for just a minute here?
Sure, go ahead.
You know, I know that being deaf probably really sucks, but it did occur to me as you were saying that a deaf person browsing the internet has never known the horror of going to, like, a GeoCities site and it starting blaring deafeningly loud MIDI calliope music at you.
They've never known the joy of hamster dance.
They can see it.
Has changed the world for deaf people. I mean, it has literally brought them into society. It has made their lives so much easier. And we have artists now who are making comics who are deaf. And they are able to interact with their fans. They are able to do everything through this text medium and be brought into a community. Because being deaf really does isolate you quite a bit. So it really has helped them out. All right, let's move on. Education. And this is a quick one. This has been going around the internet. 10 obvious things that artists need to know, and they are pretty obvious. Challenge yourself in that you want to be grow beyond your comfort zone, be nice to people in that people will help get you jobs. Goals and deadlines are important in that you should set goals and deadlines for yourself. Don't limit yourself. Sorry? Was there a comment?
No.
Nope.
Oh, okay. Don't limit yourself. Draw every day. In that every day you have to draw to improve your skill. Have fun. Obviously, you want to enjoy yourself. Breaks are important, too. Take a break. You need some time for yourself. Don't limit your influences. Did I already say that one?
No. No.
Okay, don't limit your influences. Get art from everywhere you can. Don't trash talk yourself and believe that you can do it.
That one's never going to fly with the webcomic community.
Yeah.
No.
Well, they're going to trash talk you. Yeah, well, don't trash talk yourself, but I don't think it says be an arrogant dick either. So it's there. Yeah.
And there is a distinct difference there. Yeah. I mean, I'm quite matter of fact about that. I'm not like the greatest artist out there, but there are people I know who will do something that, you know, is not only it's technically fairly solid, but it's better than what they've done before, and they'll still rip themselves a new one because of it. Yeah. And it's okay to be critical in a sort of positive light and go, well, I improved, but I didn't improve enough. I could do better. It's a whole different thing to go, well, I'm terrible and I'll never get anywhere in life. And I think a few people do still have that problem from webcomic readers I've talked to. Webcomic writers I've talked to.
Yeah,
as well.
Artists.
Yeah, artists tend to be the worst critics of their own stuff.
Yeah,
it's a strong list, though. I would, I'd point out that other than the like drawing specific suggestions, those are really good suggestions for anyone doing anything.
Yeah,
creative. I was just thinking that I've seen this list before, and thanks for posting it again.
Yeah, it was called an obvious list for exactly that reason. Art ruts are for chumps is the second to last one, and draw awesome stuff and put it on the internet. I think this is the only thing that has been added to this list from the thousand times we've seen it before, in that the internet is now your tool to get all this stuff done.
Well, it's good that the list writer is using his own advice and challenging himself by writing that new one.
Yep, there you go. So,
I will say, like,
yeah, go ahead.
You might say that's fairly obvious, but for me in particular, I mean, I come into this sort of from a different angle to a lot of people. I never really got into it because I had a story that I wanted to tell or whatnot. I basically got into webcomics because I wanted to learn how to draw. And it for a lot of people who are quite new to art, who maybe do want to tell a story, but they just can't draw at all. And you see this on comic forums all the time. It's like, I have this idea, but I'm awful. Well, that's what I was, except I kind of didn't have that, I want to be able to tell this story well, so I really need good art to be able to do that. I just went, well, screw it. I want to learn how to draw. How do I do that? Just draw stuff and put it on the internet. And if you go and have a look at my comic, HeroinTrainingComic.com, awesome plug, and go look at the first few comics, they're awful. They're like renowned as some of the worst original webcomic art on the web. I am proud of that. And you look at the art today, and it's solid. I mean, it's not amazing, but I have come a very, very long way in a comparatively short time. Without any official tutelage, without anything, I've just pretty much done what's on that list. I've drawn every day. I've kept going, pushed myself, and it's amazing what you get done remarkably quickly if you just stick at it. Mm-hmm. And the first story you tell might not be fantastic, but you got to start somewhere. And if you do, you'll get good.
Oh no, I went in a completely opposite direction. I can't draw at all, and I still have a webcomic. Can you explain that?
Yeah. And I'm the guy who gave up, so...
No.
I said, screw it, I'm going to pay someone to draw this. And that was where I went.
I'd be there if I could afford it.
Yeah. Well, Let's move on to our tidbits. These are quick ones, so we don't need to comment on them unless something really catches our eyes. Our first tidbit, coming to us from Bleeding Cool and posted on Newsarama, is that Marvel has dropped the cover of Deadpool showing him as MC Hammer for fears of lawsuits from MC Hammer. And the reason this is webcomic related is this is the comic written by Christopher Hastings of Dr. McNinja, and they put a much more bland and banal cover on it.
Derp America? Sorry.
Again, can I just say right off, one, it's Deadpool, and two, Hammer, get over yourself.
I didn't see anywhere that Hammer actually himself opposed to it, but
no.
You know, there's probably hundreds of people who've got their claws into the rights to the stuff that he did back when he, you know, broke out originally. Yeah.
Yeah. This was a protective lawsuit. There is a Deadpool movie coming out, or at least in the plans. We don't want to get embroiled in a lawsuit over anything. It's a sad part of the corporate system, but that's what it is. Moving to our next tidbit, Trickster is a con planned to happen at the same time as Comic-Con, across the street from Comic-Con. The thing that's defining Trickster as different from Comic-Con is Trickster promises to feature comics, as opposed to Comic-Con, which features movies and video games and has a few comics shoved into a corner. It's a con dedicated to specifically independent works and the lower ends of works, and it will be across from Comic-Con at the same time. So,
good to see.
Next tidbit, PowerNap is a new webcomic collective. It's being launched, and it's supposed to be different from other webcomic collectives in that it will pool money from advertising for the good of the collective. And I don't know how that phrase is different from any webcomic collective ever, but...
Because it's been done by webcomic Planet. It's been done by Palace in the Sky.
The Sky is the biggest one that I can think of, yeah, but...
It's been done.
Yeah. But it's not quite done yet, and it's using some big names in it from the comic industry. So, and they promise it. Perhaps it's different from things that they know about, but...
Are we talking webcomics here or from the syndicated comic industry?
Syndicated comic industry.
Right.
All right.
Be interesting to keep an eye on. But you usually find that those traditional groups transitioning onto the internet don't meet with a huge amount of success, at least initially.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of reasons for that.
I also just find that amusing a bit, though. If it's actually a syndicated comic setup and they think it's a new idea, that just means they're not paying attention to the market they're entering.
Yeah, which is one of the main reasons they don't do too well when they come on.
It's also likely that they're copying, that they've seen it before, but they're copying like one of the smaller collectives. They might have seen it, but not really seen some of the really polished groups that are already doing it. So they've copied an idea which is like a poor implementation of an idea that's already been well implemented somewhere else.
Yeah, you're going through the entire history of all the times professional comics, print comics, have tried to get on the net.
Yes. The wealthy nobles wander down the path thinking it's safe, and they're attacked by bandits from the trees.
Yeah. Well, moving on. On the Daily Cartoonist, we have a webcomic being launched to promote a novel made by a webcomicer, Brian Anderson, who is famous for Dog Eat Doug. And he is releasing this webcomic in conjunction with the novel to promote it. Next, a collaborative project on Twitter. This comes to us from Scott McLeod and is posted on Wineink, blogspot.com.
That would be Wine Ink.
Wine Ink, I guess.
Yes.
And this is about a idea of having 100 versions of a single comic script and using Twitter to post the 100 versions of it. So it is a collaborative product that is being set up via Twitter.
Scott's trying to stay relevant, it seems.
Yep. A last tidbit here we have under promoting comics. A man is trying to get onto Conan O'Brien by drawing Conan from every appearance he has ever had on TV. So he's going to draw hundreds of Conan pictures in an attempt to land an appearance on Conan O'Brien to promote his comic book. This comes to us from Robot 6 on Comic Book Resources, which is a sort of clever idea when you think about it, if it works. If it doesn't, then you've just got a lot of pictures of Conan O'Brien.
I would have picked somebody who has less hair. Or at least more predictable hair, you know?
Oh, come on. Conan O'Brien is the kind of guy, if you just start drawing a picture of him, he'll invite you on just for that. You don't have to do all of them.
He may invite us just for mentioning him.
Exactly.
That is cool. In fact, he should invite us instead of this guy. We should, because... We talked about the guy who was drawing pictures of him, so we should get on.
And then we can mock him.
Yes. That works.
I get a free flight to America. That'd be pretty awesome. No, the way I'm going to be able to afford it.
Yeah. Okay, so next news item, Webcomic Beacon news team tries to get on Conan O'Brien by talking about someone trying to get on Conan O'Brien.
Yes.
How much more do we have to go? I don't have my map up.
We're about done.
Okay.
So, we're finishing up. We have a few that fall into the oddities category of just cute things that we found may not be webcomic related. First thing is, according to the National Endowment for the Arts, video games are now considered art and can get funding from the United States National Endowment of the Art. Right. So, they are art forms.
Really?
Yes.
All right, we're ending the podcast really now. I got to go do an NEA grant application.
Yeah. In Australia, the Arts Council had funding for video games for a while until a group got funding to do a game based on escaping from one of our detention facilities, which obviously upset the government slightly, up to the point one of our ministers called for the people who did it to be branded as traitors and executed publicly.
Nice.
We haven't had the death penalty for quite some time.
Well, it's not like they can put them in jail.
Yeah, they know how to escape from all the detention facilities.
Yeah, you can't put them in. Yeah, exactly.
I smell a sequel.
Our next oddity here, there is a couple of pages of what Calvin would look like when he grew up. It's titled Hobbes and Bacon and shows Calvin's daughter and Hobbes, the cartoon cat. And it's a cute little set of comics. It's two comics, and apparently this is a big thing. There is a whole community that have created what Calvin's life would be like when he's grown up.
I'm not one of those people that like gets all super emotional over Calvin and Hobbes. I know they're kind of they're icons, and I get that. But if this doesn't make you at least go aw, then you really don't have a heart, and you can confront me about the fact that I said you don't have a heart, and I will punch you where your heart ought to be, and my fist will just go into your body because you don't have a heart. So there.
Well.
Alternatively, your fist will bounce off their stony metal exterior and they will exterminate you.
Okay, good point. So don't do that then.
And then have some illegitimate children.
But yeah, it was really cute. And apparently it has caused them all sorts of problems with their site because it was a bit more love from the community than they were expecting. And, yeah, but really, really well done.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's sad that we'll never get to see that, but it was very, I mean, more of it, but it was very cute for what it was. And, speaking of derivative works, and soulless creatures, there is a Toy Story Shining mashup where they put the Toy Story characters in famous images from The Shining, which is seven kinds of creepy. So it's a fun little picture. It was posted online. This coming from to us from MTV News, or Geek MTV, MTV Geek, and it is on Twitter Pics. And it's a cute thing. This, yes, it's kind of scary. And that rounds up our newscast. Yet again, joining us on the newscast for this week, we had There Is No Source. You want to plug your site again?
Yep. I write Hero in Training. That's herointrainingcomic.com.
We have Mike.
All right. That's Mike, creator of Prepare to Die from at onyxsparrow.com.
And Adam.
Yo, Adam Smithy of theappleofdiscord.com.
And I, of course, was Eric, writer for Xern and Blade Bunny, EXIERN.com and BladeBunny.com. And that's the news for today, and I'll sign off reminding you all that windmills do not work that way.
Tune in for more at webcomicbeacon.com.